Hey, what is up? Welcome to this Healing Messages for the Week with me, Reverend LC. Grateful to be here on this Saturday night, as always. Tonight, we're going to do something I feel like I haven't done for a long time, and by request of one of our newest soul sisters here in Recovery Soul Food Collective and Community, Jessica. She asked me to tell my addiction recovery story. And one question in particular that she asked was how I found it. And I thought that was really rather interesting because it gives that story the room and the ability to evolve as I've evolved. And, you know, I was thinking, I've told my story so many times, I hope I don't bore people that have been with me. But, you know, really, as the more I thought about it, the more I thought about how the story actually evolves as we alchemize different places in our life that, you know, we've now healed. We have a new perspective on the story. And so I'm really super excited to do this tonight and share with you all tonight. I'm grateful that you're here. It makes no difference what area you may find addiction in, because addiction is the most rampant thing in the world today. There's not a person, you know, there's not too many people alive that do not have some sort of active addiction, whether they recognize it or not. And so it doesn't matter what journey you're on here in the Recovery Soul Food community, because we just welcome people on a healing journey, because it gets hard. When you're really asked to go deep and you're the one, you're the chosen one and your family to change certain ancestral patterns and generational patterns, and you're the one that's called to heal on a soul level for the generations to come. When that is what you're asked to do, this journey can become very, very hard. And so that's why I make the commitment to show up here as many Saturday nights and Sundays with other things. That's the reason I continue to show up and do something like this, because we all need the help. We all need to be understood. We all need to know that someone else understands. And for everything that I go through and everything that I heal through, I want to bring it here in the hopes that it may resonate with someone and it just give them that last little thing or that one piece of information that opens them to new possibilities, and they begin to explore who they are on a divine level. Or if it's just that piece of information or inspiration or motivation that just clicks that cycle, that healing cycle into place. That's what I want to show up here for. And I'll continue to do it for as long as you all will allow me to and engage. So I'm going to do something I don't do a whole lot. I'm going to do some shares on my own tonight so that this will hopefully reach many, so that people can find, I hope, in the fact that if someone like myself can discover this journey and can work at it day by day by day, coming from where I've come from, then I hope that it will resonate that it matters not where you are. It just matters that you have a desire to stop the suffering, that you have the desire to make a change in your life. And so I'm grateful you're here. And so I'll ask you to share it, because we're also going to have, you know, I want to also share with you all a memorial, because for our friend, in honor of our friend Kim Bellis with Sober is the New Cool, I wore the shirt tonight just to honor her, as she has lost one of her great, great, great friends in our recovery community. And the suffering just became too great for Natty. And so I want to play Kim Bellis's very touching and inspiring dedication to her and her life for all of us when we get here. So, you know, this is a reality for those of us in the substance use addiction world. And it is a hard, hard truth of what happens. And I think that, you know, while we mourn those that we lose, we owe it. You know, my philosophy is I owe it to them. I owe it to them to fight through. I owe it to them. And I just feel like we have such an army of amazing human beings, because let's face it, in the substance addiction or substance. I'm not going to use, let me just say this right now. I'm not going to use terms tonight that are unnatural to me. So if I say some words that are triggering to you, I want to apologize in the very beginning. I also want to let you know that there's going to be probably some triggering words and statements and stories throughout this video. I ask you, versus just clicking them off, to lean into them as they come up for you. If something really engages a certain emotion that you have, I ask you to lean into it. You know, don't just shy away. Don't push away. We're going to talk about that a lot tonight, because that's a big thing. And so lean into the triggers. But for those of us in the substance abuse community, we have some of the most talented human beings on earth, some of the most gracious and humble earth angels somehow tend to fall deeper into the substance addiction. And so, you know, that was Natty as well. And this is a sad truth for us in this community, that we lose mighty humans. But again, we have them standing with us. So as you go through your healing journey, as you go through your recovery journey, it's a great thing to know that it's about something much larger than ourselves. And all of those that we've lost are walking with us and pushing us forward. And in my opinion, for me, I owe it to them to recover myself, my health. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And I'm going to do some shares. So I said all of that to ask you to do some shares, if you feel led, if you know a place where people are suffering. And so that's what I'm going to do. While you guys are doing your shares, I do want to make mention my good friend Pamela Topchian's book. It's a great resource, very inspiring story. I'm so proud of her. She is a beautiful part of our collective here, our community. She is my soul sister, and I'm so grateful for her. And she has this book on Amazon. You can go to amazon.com/ Pamela Topchian, because you can also pick up her newest book, Behind the Mask, Gloves, and Scrubs, One Nurse's Journey. She talks a lot about her experience as a family member of people that suffer with substance addiction and some of her experiences and how she, you know, got up from her give up. And she has absolutely and is ongoingly still creating a life that she loves. So you can find amazing inspiration in that. You can also find some amazing peace, some amazing wisdom in this new book by Martin John Garcia, his amazing wisdom lent to the Tao Te Ching. It's this great little pocket book. It's got all 81 verses and all the ways that, you know, it is his message and his experience with this has channeled through. So it's an amazing book to get, and you can get that at martinjohn.com. Remember, if you want to pick up your Sober is the New Cool gear, you can go to soberisthenewcool.ca. That's her. And if you want to help us keep going and growing, you can go to anchor.fm/recoverysoulfood. You can become a monthly member there. There are packages from 99 cents to $10.99. And that just helps us keep the podcast on the air. And I would be super honored if, you know, to all of you that are there already, thank you. Special shout out to you. I really, really appreciate you and believe in and letting me express what I feel like are my gifts. And so thank you to you all already. All right. If we're all done with our shares and we're all done with our stuff, then let's get into this Saturday Night Soul Session. I'm going to play the intro, and then immediately after, I am going to play Kim Bellis's most beautiful, touching tribute to her friend Natty, who we lost to overdose and to suffering. So, all right, if y'all are ready, I am absolutely ready. So let's go. Yeah. How inspiring and how touching. And our hearts go out to Kim, and they go out to Natty's family. And she was just a sweet soul. In the few interactions that I got to have with her, she was she was just a touching and precious human being. And like I was saying in the beginning, if you were here, I'm telling you, some of the most beautiful and amazing and big-hearted human beings are often in our community, and it's sad that we lose some of them. And so I want to thank y'all for fighting through your struggles today. I want to thank you for showing up here and showing up for yourself. And if you know somebody that's struggling, encourage them to please continue to reach out and become an inspiration for them and for the people around you. I'm telling you, you really, really, really never know what it is that you're going to just randomly say to somebody that could instantly change their world. It's happened. I have testimony of it happening. So that's why I tell you with so much fervor and passion, and just keep fighting for your life. What you're going to hear in my story tonight is how many times that I was in the same place, did not know where to go, thought that, you know, that was my only option, and tried for it. And it's so important that you start to begin to see yourself for your true divinity, to be more accepting of ourselves. Because that's usually what it is. It's some type of resistance to our pain, an inability to see past the suffering. We get engulfed in the suffering. And I'm super passionate about this, to the point that I had to stop working one-on-one with people for the last maybe almost 2 years, really, is because I get frustrated, and not in a bad way. I don't get angry with them in a bad way. I get angry because I can see who they are truly. And I want so desperately for others to be able to see themselves, even just a glimpse like that. Because if they knew how special they truly were, then it would all change. They would fight for their lives, and they would be able to make it through. And sometimes it's just a glimmer of hope. So I'm going to kind of loop that back around. One of the questions that Jessica asked once again that I thought was so interesting was how I found recovery. And it's an elegant way to say the truth of it is not elegant. It was much dirtier and deeper than that, because I did not realize what a gift being at my complete utter bottom truly, truly was. And so I started out in the world in a very weird dynamic, already kind of being the thing between my mom and her parents. So my life kind of started in a bit of turmoil with a lot of, you know, energy. Around 4 years old, I recognized a big difference within myself. I knew that I was just different, that I didn't match my outsides and insides, and very confusing. And then I started experiencing some molestation when I was 5, and it just began, it just kept on. It was like these traumas that just kept building on top of each other. And I was a person that was so drawn within, because it was safer to contain all of that within and hold it and just not ever say anything about it, and I started drinking at 11. And I remember the first time that I actually drank and got, you know, the feeling, it was like an instant thing with me. I remember it happening. It was like this switch that flipped that said, oh, this is the release that we've been looking for. You know, this is the way not to feel all of this, because I feel like from a time of a very, very, very young age, I was engulfed in suffering. It seemed to be all I knew on the inside of me. And to be, and again, I didn't share anything outward. So I was just a powder keg of all of this stuff that was going on, because I was embarrassed, so embarrassed about the molestation. And then it just seemed to keep happening. Like it, once that happened, it would just happen all the time. So I really started, you know, going within. I became, my first real battle with addiction was a food addiction. I would eat and, you know, I can correlate, you know, so I became like an overweight kid. But I can, knowing what I know now, I can also correlate that to that stress hormone that just, you know, the perfect storm that made me an overweight kid. And that seemed to be a big deal. So my shame loop was going on and on and on. And I had been told, and it was likely in some ways true, but, you know, I don't really know, that my, you know, my father had given up his rights to me when I was 2, and I didn't know him. And so that was always an empty place in my world. So there was a lot of, you know, missing things, and suffering was my constant. So when I had that drink and I had that thing, that switch flip on, I started doing it every weekend, and I never had any breaks. So at 11, you know, of course, you don't know, you're only supposed to have a few drinks. I just drank until I couldn't drink anymore, until my body said no. And so I started doing that every weekend. I would live for that. And it was after and with, you know, got to meet my father when I was 8, started spending time with him when I was like 10. So the drinking would happen with him. So it was also like this bonding. Oh, he sees me if I do this. And, you know, he tells me I'm like him. And I, you know, wanted that, needed that. So I kept all of that up, and it just went on and on and on for a lot of years. And I started getting in trouble because I started sneaking into my grandparents' liquor and would make these drinks at night and, you know, would get drunk. And I remember this really big time where I had been sneaking drinks and my grandparents didn't know. And then I got super sick, and it was this really big thing. I mean, I had alcohol poisoning, and I would go on to have alcohol poisoning and massive accidents in behind alcohol for probably like the next, I don't know, probably at least 12 times with alcohol poisoning, and accidents at least 12 with alcohol. It was always a rough ride with me. And then when I was 14, no, I think I was 12. No, I was 12. This older kid in the neighborhood had this little bottle of stuff and told me it was an inhalant. And I remember it stunk so bad. But again, the feeling clicked, and I was instantly, you know, back to that kid. You know, I can look back and see where that addiction just settled itself in with these experiences. And so I would very soon after that have my first experience with smoking marijuana. And I was just never afraid of things. I always knew I was destined for harder drugs. I was just never afraid. And I thought that, well, I had already made the association that anything that stopped my thoughts or gave me a feeling of euphoria was for me. And so I knew that my ultimate goal was heroin. And, you know, that would come after, you know, like discovering pain pills at 19 and I didn't have any idea you could take them for fun. What's up, Rhonda? I didn't have any idea you could take them for fun until I did. And then once I did, switch, and it was on. But I had still not ever even shared, had broken myself really open to anyone about all that I was carrying on the inside. And I would go through these relationships, you know, I was overweight, and I kept thinking, well, if I get, you know, that's the problem. So if I get rid of that, then I'm going to be happy and I can stop all of this. Because it was, as in this, you know, examples, I was 0 to 100 immediately. There was just no building up. I just went all in with everything. And so I thought if I had, you know, if I could get rid of this weight, it's the weight. The weight makes me feel shameful. I was completely unaware, honestly, because I was of the opinion that if I did not think about the past could not be affecting me. So it must have been what was happening right then. And I had a great shame about my weight. And I manifested, well, I'd had ulcers since I was young from just the stress. And so I had manifested them up again. And so I went in for these ulcers that were dangerous. And I got, you know, they told me they could do this surgery that would take care of the ulcers and repair and help me lose massive amounts of weight. And so I did that when I was 21. And very quickly after that, I realized that that didn't hold the happiness that I thought it was, because my past was still affecting me. Whether I was thinking about it again or not, it would just continue it would be something else. I'd be in pursuit. And so my addictions would get deeper each time I tried one of those external happiness things, and it did not work. You know, so I would go through relationships thinking if I have this, then it's going to make me happy, and nope. And I just kept going deeper. And, you know, once the pain pills didn't do it anymore, or they became unavailable, you know, then I went to something else. And when I started heroin, that was the number one. I mean, that was the pursuit of happiness. And I really hated, one of the things that I kept me in that suffering loop while I was out there using is because I always felt like I was going against myself for all the things that I had to do. Because, you know, once the addictions take over, it had become such an ingrained monster within me that it was like I would have to, like, what do we do? Lie, cheat, and steal. And every time I would do one of those things, I would know that I would somehow inherently know that I was going against who I truly was. And that was always such a big deal with me, you know, is going against what I know to be true about myself. But I didn't know it, but I just always felt like that. And so it would always give me this great shame and guilt. And so those were my core emotions going up. These were the things that were just drawing the life out of me each and every single day, were the guilt and the shame. The shame because I knew I was different. The guilt and disappointment that I would probably never get to live a really full and happy life because I would always not be aligned with myself. And so all of that, that was what was just sucking me dry. And so I was just I was engulfed in the suffering that was just stealing my life. And, you know, I remember on my 25th birthday, I overdosed and flatlined. And then I think about by the time I got to my 30th birthday, I was so ready for the suffering and the pain to truly end. And I had tried all this before, and I'm not going to say the word. I think you guys will pick up what I'm putting down. I had tried a couple times before, but never with this amount of intention and purpose just for the pain to stop. Just, I could not continue to go on like that. I just couldn't. The suffering was just too much. The addictions were just burning through everything and through me. And I had just lost everything. You know, it was one of those breakdown moments. You know, I had just gotten married. She was gone, had totaled my truck. I'd been in an accident. I couldn't walk. I was stuck away out in the country, the middle of nowhere. I had no friends, really. I mean, I was in one of those moments where we get that I just could not carry the weight of my suffering anymore. And so with all intentions, and even telling my family goodbye, and I woke up the next morning, and I wish that I could say that that was the turnaround, that I got my life together, but I was angry. I was so angry because I didn't wake up with a new vision, or I didn't wake up in a new timeline or whatever. I woke right back up in those situations. And now, you know, all of my whole family knows that that's, you know, that that's was my intention. And now I've got to say, well, I failed at this too. That was basically how I felt. Well, I failed at this too. I'm worthless. And that's what I believed, y'all. I believed I was worthless. I believed I was God's little joke. That if there was something terrible that was going to happen with somebody, it was going to be me, and it was going to be deep trauma. It wasn't like, you know, I really got the little stuff. I always got the big stuff. And so I was angry, and I would go on to spin even further out of control in my addiction. I had sold everything. I had sold everything in my grandparents' house. I mean, I was so desperate. And I think about the different degrees of people that I see that come into recovery that have gone through an addiction, and the different degrees of how far down they go or what their bottom is. And for me, I think that people that just go all the way into this depth and level of suffering that I'm talking about right now, it is closely related to the deep amount of trauma that we have. You know, some people can, you know, realize they have a problem in month 3 and get in recovery and turn that around. And that's amazing. Amazing. But there's some of us that just cannot seem to not follow this thing all the way down. And so I've had a million and one rock bottom moments. I would go on to end up going to jail, committing multiple felonies when that was my biggest fear. I, you know, started going to jail, and then I got locked up for a long time. A little later that year, I'd say no, the following year, I got locked up after that attempt. And it was a good thing that I did, because when I went and they weighed me, I weighed 87 pounds, and I was coughing up blood. Like, I was on my way out. And, you know, staying there, as horrible as it was, you know, really, it saved me. It sincerely saved me. I mean, even though I recognized it for saving me, but I still didn't understand for what. You know, I was still the same miserable, miserable human. And I just had no control of my life. And I had no, it's like I would chase anybody that tried to love me or, you know, away. And, you know, my family had already had to just kind of basically distance themselves from me, you know. And so I just felt like I was alone in the world, just, and couldn't understand why. Couldn't understand why. But I spent that time and I kind of got my strength back and I came back out and I went to a halfway house and I tried to do all of the things. And I really became disappointed once again because everybody was going to NA and AA, and it was really, really, really working for them. And it wasn't that the concepts did not work. They just weren't, it just wasn't for me. And I knew that, you know, but I'd still, you know, work the steps and do all the stuff. And I got great wisdom from there, but I knew that that was not going to be my thing, the thing that was going to, you know, help me make this connection and kind of stay. And so that was very, very disappointing for me. And I got really scared because outside of that, I really had no idea. We didn't have resources, you know, a lot of resources like we do today. And we certainly didn't have this. Another reason why I like to do this, because we just didn't have anything. And if that didn't work for you, you were on your own. And I knew it was only a matter of time before I could just fight off wanting to do, you know, wanting to engage. I didn't have any foundation other than that. So just trying to hold it back is like, you know, trying to hold a dam of water back with your hands. And so eventually it cracked and I, you know, went back and got just way spun out. And finally, a woman came along and while we were both basically, as we look back on it, in active addiction then, because I tried, I was still in the process of holding this thing back and long enough to meet my wife. And so I always had this feeling growing up that if I ever had a family, that if I ever had a child, that would be the thing. There was just something in me that knew deep in my soul that would be something that switched my life around, that would be what would give me the strength to fix this thing, fix it. And so I ran from that like the plague, because within me, I wanted to keep doing things that way, seemed like the easy way, because I didn't understand how to process all that had happened. I didn't understand anything about integrating or how the body and the nervous system holds on to those things. So it was just like I was being triggered all the time, that I couldn't get out of, you know, all of the blastings of my memories and my past and my story and my identities and all of the things that we get so caught up in. And so, you know, this woman comes along and immediately I know it was another one of those things. Immediately I know. And then, but we're both traumatized human beings. And so we got to play all of that stuff out. But with her, came our son, and he was 4 at the time and would quickly turn 5 after we met. And there was just inherently, I knew that this was my family. And so I was super disappointed when I found myself back in the throes of addiction after a knee injury. It was tame. I wasn't out in the street yet. None of that stuff. But, you know, here I was back on the prescription trail, with this knee injury, and I fought it so hard. And, so there, you know, I get a little spun out again and, meet some people as you always do and, you know, love to party. And so there was a lot of that, you know, around. So it was very, very easy to do. And it felt right at home. And so, you know, I would run that way for quite a while. And then my whole world came crashing down in late 2007. And this will be the breakdown that breaks through to who I am today. And so I think that if I had to answer how I found it, this would kind of be the very beginning of that. Because in late 2007, December, I got a phone call at night while I was at work. And the phone call came in, and the voice just told me that Brandon, who was my best friend and my brother and the only person in the world that I felt like saw me, you know, for me and who I was, and we just had this amazing bonded friendship together, said that he was gone. And it was just so shocking to me that it just, everything crashed in. I just crashed in on myself. And I just spun completely out of control. I couldn't understand why I just kept having to suffer. It was just all of this suffering, just compounded suffering upon suffering upon suffering. And it would take me so long to like go through all of the suffering details. So I'm just giving you kind of the highlights, but it just seemed to be a theme in my world. And so there's that. And then about 2 weeks later, I get a call that my grandmother, who, you know, I'd always grown up with them. They adopted me when I was 17, but they helped raise me throughout my life, along with my mom. So it wasn't like the adoption, they took me from her or anything. It wasn't like that, but she was a mother figure to me. And, there was a different feel with her on a maternal sense than there was with my mom. So that, you know, she loved me, and she was just always there, you know, for me. And I got a call that she had pneumonia. And then a couple of days later, or the next day, I get a call to say that she's dying. And I have no money. I'm on probation at this point. I can't just leave the state. I can't go be with my family. I can't just jump up and go. And I'm devastated. Because I wasn't ready, you know, I wasn't ready to let her go. I think the last time we actually spoke, we probably argued. And I didn't think she really understood because of my addiction and the way that I was having to be to survive. I didn't think that she understood how much I loved her, or how important she was to me, or how special she was to me. And I drown myself even deeper, you know, trying to drown out that disappointment in myself that I would never get to tell her how important she was to me and how much I was going to miss her. And so all of this is going on, and I'm spiraling out of control, and my body begins to break down and starts to die from pure grief. My heart break is breaking my body. My muscles and my legs begin to atrophy, and I can't walk on them. I'm rapidly losing weight. I have no appetite, and I'm just content to lay there and die this slow death. You know, and I go to the doctor, because my wife is pushing me to go to the doctor, and he tells me, "You've got to get your affairs in order because you probably only got about 6 months to live." And I remember thinking to myself, good, just good. Finally, you know? And so while I'm riding that ride out and giving myself every excuse in the book just to go deeper and deeper and darker and darker, and man, does it get dark when you're on your way to your greatest breakthrough, it is going to be darkest, the darkest. Understand that when you're swimming through pure hell, it is taking you to the greatest breakthrough of your entire life, the thing that is just going to kick the doors open for a whirlwind of change. And it doesn't mean it's all going to be unicorns and rainbows. It's going to be tough, but the change is coming. And it's always evolving you into the next level of change if you will recognize it and you will let it take you. We spend so much time in resistance, especially in this community. And I'm going to tell you the truth right now. It might make some of you mad, but I want you to hear me out. We spend so much time in this community avoiding our triggers that we rob ourselves of the blessings of our breakthroughs, because each one of those things are telling us what it needs. And it's not something you can just do right off the bat. You just can't go in on all your triggers. So be smart, strategic, study yourself. That's what I did. I'll get to the part of the story in a minute, but that's what I did. I studied myself. I took apart my failures. I looked at where it was the hardest for me. And I built a strategy from that. And some days I got it right and some days I didn't. But I just bowed to myself and my family and my son and his legacy that I was just going to keep getting up every day and trying no matter what. And so, you know, I was in the depths of my hell. It was so dark in my world. Our son wasn't even with us at the time. He had gone to live with his grandmother. And when he did, boy, we just spun out because we had nothing there to hold it together for. In 6 months to the day after I lost my grandmother, my grandfather, her husband, who had been a number one in my life for my entire life, was now gone. And the only difference was, once again, I was back in the same situation, got a call, not going to make it very much longer. I can't just get up and leave. I can't run to this man as he has run to me every time I've needed him in my life thus far. And I can't get up and legally or monetarily run to him. But I do get to express to him how important he was. And in the last conversation, well, I won't call it a conversation. My mom held the phone to his ear while I told him how much he meant to me, how much he had influenced me, how grateful I was, and how sorry I was for how I had turned out. And I'm using the words and the emotions that I felt at the time. I was so sorry for how I had turned out. And in that those statements came this promise that I made him. And I said, I don't know how, but I'm going to figure out a way to pull my life together and make something so special out of it that it makes you proud that I carry your last name. And the whole time I'm saying this, like, there's a part of me that's like, who's this? We don't make promises. We break promises. Like, what are you talking about? You can't make a promise like that at a moment like this and think we're going to be able to pull it off, man. You're on death's door. Like, this is the conversation that I'm having with myself. But inside of me, somewhere deep, and I want you to pay attention to those deep places within you, those pulls, those things that you just inherently know are for you. Got to pay attention to those, because there was just that little inkling that broke through my resistance and ego that said, this means something and we're going to do it. And I had no idea how. They had been my monetary support, let alone, you know, the whole addictive part. They had been my monetary support. I was in no shape to work. Not to mention, you know, a radical addiction. And I had no clue what I was going to do. Car had been repossessed. We had a single wide trailer, and that was all I owned in the world. In the world. I didn't have no credit, no people that would loan me money. Are you kidding me? People would run from me. And I had no idea what I was going to do. And I just wanted this whole sickness of mine to keep going. Meanwhile, there's my wife with me and won't give up on me. No matter how hard I tried to push her away, because it was, I couldn't just give up while she was in the picture, because it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair to her. And she wasn't leaving. And if this was going to be my last 6 months on earth, she was going to be there with me for it. And I started recognizing that in her, and it just started giving me these little places of inspiration. These little places where I could get outside of myself just enough that I could start to see a purpose. A purpose that was going to help me move in the direction and go through it, or at least just keep waking up and trying it. Sometimes that's one of the key ingredients if you are just starting out, is get something, look for something, ask for it. If you just ask for it, it will find its way to you. I guarantee you, when we go start efforting and trying to find it, trying to find that purpose, trying to decide what it is, we're off over into ego and we're looking for an identity, something that will make us special in the world. And I mean, a lot of artists have it. You know, you don't really, can't really be, you know, a celebrity. You can't really be on social media. You can't really be all that without a part of that. But, you know, it's not consuming. We start looking and naming what purposes are. And really, there is this divine purpose for your life. And all of these things are a part of it. All of these things move you, because then now in my story, we take off like a rocket. You know, I sell the only thing that I own. We go, you know, we move to a different state, to where I spent my childhood summers in the mountains of North Carolina with no plan and not much money, and me sick, still trying to check out, you know, just trying to let this thing play out. And it doesn't happen. I just keep living. Then we come to a place where my wife and I have to actually separate, because we are now at the end of our road. We have nowhere else to be. And we're about to be homeless after living in almost an abandoned, like it was an off-season mountain hotel. We've had some wild experiences along the way, and I won't say it's all been bad. That's the thing. We got to learn to honor the stuff that, you know, the great experiences that we had when we had them, and not give so much attention to the bad ones that we continuously had. Kind of stay out of the shame loops. Stay out of the loops. If you'll remember to stay out of the loops, let that be part of your recovery battle plans. Identify your loops and stay out of them. And when you dip your toe in them, pull it back. Awareness. Awareness, y'all. Awareness is what's going to change your life. When you start to be able to be aware of your life, your failures, your successes, and all that stuff, you'll be able to create a life you love. I'm telling you, you'll be able to create a recovery program that is less about efforting and more about receiving and moving through, because as you heal these things, you start to heal the desire to escape it all. You start to cultivate a different type of happiness and fulfillment. And I know this sounds airy-fairy. I know it, but it's true. You start to cultivate a different type of happiness. You identify what real happiness is. You start to be able to associate, and you have a contrast of things. And so you start to be able to do that. And that's what awareness does. A lot of times the triggers that trigger you the most just want you to be aware of them and aware of what it is. Because it's like if we're always just trying to hide from the lion, you know, eventually it's going to find us. You can only hide for so long. If we're always trying to hide from it, then we never face it. And we're always its victim. You see? We're always addiction's victim if we never look at the reasons why we got there. And if we don't look at the ways that we keep going back. And as you start to heal those things that come up and become aware of those things, because some things release, like I said, with just awareness. Other things you're going to have to dig into. And you're going to have to do some work. And it's going to be hard. And if you're new in recovery, the bulldozer's coming. You set energy in motion back out there on the street, and it's going to come. So know that's your strategy. What do you always tell yourself when it runs over you? Well, I tried to do the right thing, and look what happened. I might as well use. You know you've said it. I've said it. We've said it. So understand, if you can get out in front of that and let somebody tell you the truth is, look, you've set some stuff in motion, man, that you're fixing to have to come and get, you're going to have to take care of. That's just the way it is. But you can start creating new energy today. You can start creating a different type of energy today. Keep getting back up. Start to recognize and listen to things and people that tell you who you are as a true empowered human being. You can do this. You can. There's no way around it. You can do it. But I didn't come into this thing to always hide from addiction. I was not going to hide from relapse so that it could get me when I'm at my weakest. Because that's when it gets you. So I turn around and look at it. When you look at the monster, you get to see it for what it is. When you flip the lights on, you get to see it for what it is. Some things are going to be bigger than others. It's going to be more complicated, like I said. But some things, you're just going to be able to see it and go, oh, man, here I am thinking you're about a 400-pound lion behind that door. And what? It's not even. What is it, a kitten? That's the cliche. It's a kitten. You know, not everything's going to be like that. But take those wins when you get them. That awareness will take care of that sometimes. And change up your stuff. Don't live in the same energy. And try to do something new. You can't be around the same old people. And I know it feels like you're abandoning folks, but that's just the way it is. You got to abandon people and energy so that you can save yourself. Because I'm going to tell you what, the people that I have around me today, the caliber and the beautifulness and the amazingness and the talented people that I have surrounding me today, I could never have dreamed of ever in my life. And each one of them holds such a special place. And I can't believe I have this much capacity to hold that much love for people. You know, I really didn't. I'm so grateful to watch my capacity to hold special places for people and hold people. Is just, and the love for people is just amazing. And I still struggle in a lot of ways, but I'm always asking questions. And so, you know, we get jump back to the story. My wife and I have to separate. You know, she has to go to Alabama. I've got to stay here in North Carolina. I'm in a situation where it's rocky. It's on eggshells. But this is my last. I ain't got nothing else. I got nowhere else to go. and I'm in no shape to be out in the streets, you know, fending for myself. So I have to go back to here. Sometimes your biggest haters can become your greatest motivation. And they can become the ones that don't, you know, the ones that don't believe in you can become your greatest motivation. They can become your greatest gifts. This, you know, it happened to me. You know, I had to come back and stay with my mom, and I knew my stepdad did not want me here. And, you know, I wasn't young when he married my mom, so I never really kind of claimed him as that. And so it was very contentious. But I started getting angry. I was like, man, I'm separated from my wife who's been there for me, like carried me back and forth to the bathroom, made sure that I ate something every day, had taken care of me thus far. And now I'm without my foundation, none of my foundations. I'm in a place where I know I'm not wanted, but I'm there. And so I just start taking these walks every day out to the horse pasture. My mom had a horse at the time. I just remember taking these walks out there, and I would just connect with him. I'd just brush him for as long as I could stand out there. And I was on MAT at the time, and, you know, MAT was something that saved my life. It was necessary, you know, for me, and I'll get to that part in a minute. But, you know, I had had bouts with it before, but I had abused it in the past. Like I said, I've got many tries and failures, and just, you know, I had a lot to build a good strategy on. Let's just say like that. But I go out and I'm spending time with this horse, and it's like I'm having this almost spiritual experience. I'm finding myself just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And I got this fire in me that I was going to fight for my family, that I wanted my family. Once I started realizing that I was bringing myself back into health, and I was doing really well, and I had gotten a job, and I had bought my first little $400 car, you know, and I was doing something. I was being something and somebody in the world, you know, for the first time. And I had that was the expectations, you know, of me. And so I was accountable for that stuff. But I got this fire once I showed myself I could go past what I believed was possible for myself, and I could accomplish something that I didn't think I could ever really would have done again. And now I've got the foundation to start building the platform to get my family back. That was my next major goal. Nobody's going to separate me from my family. I'm going to get my family back. And so I just keep getting stronger and stronger every day. I just keep leaning in to these little rinky-dink counseling sessions they'd give you. I'd just lean into them, man. I would just let it all out because I just needed to get all of that. Sometimes you lift your spirits, your energy, when you let some of that darkness, that shame, that guilt come out of you. And you do that a lot of times by letting it out. Don't expect a therapist or somebody to fix you. Let all that stuff out. And once you're done kind of getting all of that, you know, if you're in one of those programs, make somebody counsel you. Make your therapist help you. Don't let them just let you show up and tell them what's going on in your life today. Don't let them do that. If a lot of you don't have insurance and you're in these free not-for-profit programs, utilize them. Don't expect them to be your savior, but utilize the resources that they have and make it work for you. Make them counsel you. Ask them questions. You know, ask them for feedback. Don't let them just sit there and let you talk for 30 minutes so that you're their entertainment. You know, they're just listening to different people's rhetoric all day, and that's their entertainment for the day. Like watching a reality show almost. Don't do that. Ask them for feedback. Start building yourself. Start building your program. Because there's not one thing that's going to truly heal it all. You're going to have to pull from so many different places, because this really is. And I started, you know, I ultimately get my family back, and I ultimately end up having a 9-month relapse after something very traumatic happened. And at that 9-month relapse, I remember the doctor giving us this diagnosis for our son, and the condition that was causing it was stress. And that really woke me up to think, oh, do I want to pass all of this on to him? I recognized that in myself. What would I have wanted my family to do when they recognized that I was under a lot of stress and I was too young to be that way? And so I knew in that moment that I had to either go all in and say goodbye, or I was going to have to figure out how to truly change my mind and heal my heart. And I somehow understood that in this one moment, right after a shot. And I just was sitting there, and I found myself just waiting for the relief to come. And when it did, I had that profound thought that, so this is what you're giving it all away to. This one fleeting feeling that is not even real, because there's no substance to it. It comes and it goes, to where true love and connection lasts long after a person leaves your energy or leaves the room. True connection is a special type of thing. And I knew inside of my head, I can't do this. I can't pass this on to him. I can't know that this is going to be his legacy. So I'm going to just do whatever it takes. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I knew at the time that I had to step back into MAT, because I knew that no matter how bad your head, you know, and your heart wants to get you there, sometimes the body will override it. And that was one of my strategies. I started looking at things. Where do I start? Where do I start with this? And I started looking at the things that would acutely send me back quickly. And that was generally the physical sickness. So I had to do something about that. But I made a deal with myself. I made set boundaries. I will not go over this amount. I will not do this. You know, I will utilize this. And I did all of those things. I stuck to those boundaries. I had had enough experience to know how to properly utilize it as a tool versus the cure. And that's the big issue. It walks the line very evenly, you know, of a tool and the cure. And there's never anything outside of you that's the cure. You know what I mean? Outside of your spiritual alignment, whatever, you know, you call, whatever it is, if it's God for you, if it's, you know, whatever. There's never anything truly successful that comes from outside of that of you. And so we got to recognize that. And so I started building strategy. Where do I first start to go wrong? Okay, the first thing that ends up happening, I get physically sick. I ride around for about 3 days and then gone. And I didn't want to do that. And I had this thing about this purpose. This was a purpose. There will be many purposes throughout your life, but a purpose I had to have was creating a different legacy for my son. That was it. And I just kept moving towards that. Even when I tripped over shit in the way and, you know, emotions got in the way. I mean, all kinds of stuff. When I was acting like a crazy person, I was still going. That was the end goal, was to create a different legacy and get up and try every single day. And I didn't want to be a hypocrite. So anything that I would tell him not to do, I would make sure that I didn't, you know, that I didn't do, that if, you know, so I always try to be honest with him. So this would be the thing that really kicked open the recovery. I started in my mind, because then my second stage of strategy was, what is the thing that just keeps, will drive me along with the body or after that? And it was my mind. It was just constantly running over and over and over the past. I couldn't get it to stop going over the past. And it was this one movie that would play about my life, and it would just be hurt after hurt after hurt after hurt after hurt. And I didn't understand, well, how do I see it any other way? This is how it happened. And we have the story. Each one of us has a film role of our life, and it has a narrative to it. And that narrative, whether you know it or not, is driving the experiences that you have in your life in every way. If you are poor and cannot hold on to money, it is because you have a narrative of, I cannot hold on to money. We have a narrative. If I am abused, then that is my narrative and that is my experience, because it will seek me out, as I will subconsciously or consciously seek it out. So I knew I was going to have to get a hold of my mind, and that was where I was going to start. And so I listened to this free, oh gosh, it was some kind of free webinar. A couple years earlier, someone had given me the movie, or let me watch the movie, The Secret. And so I had first learned some things about, you know, the law of attraction and stuff in that movie. But I kind of thought the way they explained it all, it couldn't be the truth. You know what I mean? And really it wasn't. It goes so much deeper than that. But the thing that helped to do was introduce me to at least this idea of, if you change your thoughts, then you can change your life. And so it did at least introduce me to that concept, and this man named Bob Proctor. And so he did this free webinar about the 12 laws of the universe. And I sat there and I studied, and it was a big deal for me, because, you know, I was desperate. When you are desperate to make that change, you will go after what it takes to do that, you know. And I was so hungry for it that, you know, I made everybody in the house be quiet. I went in this room by myself. I had notes in this notebook that I have to this day, where I wrote out all these concepts. And it was like, as I was writing them, my eyes were just opening and opening and opening. And for once, I could start to understand what all of that really had meant, and how I could see in my life where I was making these, you know, it was my perceptions. And so he had this suggestion. I've told this many times. So for those that it's a repeat, I'm sorry, you could probably tell it yourself. He had this suggestion, this practice that, because he kept saying, gratitude changes the game. Gratitude changes the game. And I could not for nothing find gratitude. I just couldn't see it. All I could see was everything that was wrong and everything that was standing in the way and all the obstacles. I couldn't see past all of that. So he said, when you, I don't know if it was before you went to bed or when you get up in the morning, find 10 things to be grateful for. Just write on purpose before you ever, it was in the morning, because he said before you ever even get out of bed, find 10 things to be grateful for. And if you can't find 10, find 5. And so I kept on and kept on, and I could not find 5. So I found this one thing. You know, I connected with this one, I just found one thing. And that's all you got to find, is one thing that you can truly, truly, truly connect with on a true level that goes beyond your head and your what you say, but that really connects in your heart. And we had this little dog, her name is, well, we have her, her name is Sweet Pea, and that was what I just focused on every day, because I could pick her up and I could hold her and I could feel love, and I could be grateful for feeling that even for a moment. And so I started doing that every day, and I started recognizing slowly that I was starting to add to that list. I started being able to see things in a different perspective. It wasn't like a veil just opened up and boom, life was different. No, this was gradual. And I just started seeing the power of how these things were working and how it was possible for someone like me who stayed locked in their mind all the time could actually change that whole process and actually be able to experience my life in a different way. Because when you're grateful and that starts to grow within you, it builds this openness and it starts to change your relationships and it starts to change your workplace, and it just starts to change your life on intricate levels to where you do start to make connections with people in from a different energy and space, and you're more likely to give other people grace for who they are as well whenever we are able to start to shift that. But it's not one of these things, like I said, that just flips overnight, and you're going to have to be intentional and you're going to have to do it on purpose. You're going to have to make time for this because you're not used to it. So your ego mind's going to give you 150 excuses not to do it. And it's going to win sometimes. But if you will start doing something like this and you do it for a month, do it for a month straight, commit to yourself that every day I'm going to spend, I'd say 5 minutes, because 1 minute's really not enough. If you practice and you get good at it, you can get it in a minute, because it's a certain feeling you got to lock into. It's got to be your head and your heart. It's got to align together. It can't just be bladder out of the mouth. You got to really pull it in and you got to feel it. So I'm going to say 5 minutes in the morning. If you're really gung ho, do it 5 minutes in the morning and do it 5 minutes before you go to bed. And you want to speed up, you know, that perception change, you do it like that, you get serious. And some people can do that. I can be a slacker. I'll just do it once a day, you know. But some people, boom, this clicks in and they're like, I'm tired of suffering. I'm not going to drudge through this mud. I'm fixing to jump up and run, son. I'm ready to get out of here. And so that's what they do. And bravo. Because this starts to change your mindset, and as your perception starts to change, you start making different decisions, and you start seeing things through a different lens, and you start doing shit like adulting, and you're proud of it. It's hard. It was for me. I had never done it before, really, and that's the honest truth. I had been out there spun out since I'm 19 years old. So, you know, I had left a lot of missed opportunity and ruined things in my path. But, you know, here I was. Here I was, dedicated to this, you know, this healing, dedicated to go through it, dedicated to push through no matter what, and just made sure that I kept that one thing. And, you know, like I said, your purpose is going to change throughout this. Because eventually, once I solidified that I had truly changed that for my son, and it's only now I'm starting to actually get to recognize that it did happen. And so I'm super grateful for that. And I can wake up every day and all throughout the day. Like, it's so weird. I'm like an emotional wreck when it comes to my son. I can just think about how proud I am of him in the middle of the day and just choke up, because it lets me know, man, every one of those hard days, every one of those moments where I just want to give up, I'm tired, every one of those days, it was worth it. It was worth it. And I know not everybody will get to have this experience, but you will. you will get the experience to see the fruits of your work if you are, and you're healing. And it'll happen in the love that you develop in your life. And as the more you start practicing with your awareness and starting to get aware of all of these things, and you start getting some change under your belt, you're building a foundation now. You're building a foundation, and now you just keep platforming up. You just keep going up. And sometimes you're going to trip and fall down a few of those steps and rake your shins across them, and life's is going to hurt. But just know that you're going to something that's on the other side of this. And if you keep walking up and you never let yourself, you know, go all the way down. And even if you do, man, if you've got life, try again. Take what you've learned. Don't give up on your life. Your life has far more potential in it than you can see. And I know people used to tell me this, and I used to think they were full of shit. And you may think I'm full of shit, but test me. Test me. Take what I'm telling you right now. Put it together in your life. Test me. I want you to test me. I want you to stay alive long enough to understand who you truly are. I want you to understand your divine empowerment. I want you to take that, and I want you to see who you truly are. I want you to become and be the highest possible version of yourself. And it's possible. And we're all on our way to it. And it's not necessarily a destination. We don't get to a place. But it's ongoing. You know, some of you have heard me talk about this. And I don't know others of you have it. You know, I turned 50 in January. And on that day, from all those birthdays I told you guys about, on that day, I got to stand and take pictures for a newspaper article that was coming out about me in our local paper. They called me about, you know, recovery. And I'm grateful to be known for that. I'm grateful today to be known for my recovery advocacy, because I'm fighting. We're fighting for everybody. I'm fighting to make a better space of recovery for people coming in, because it's not like addiction's really going down. We are being called to heal, and that is what this is about. And if you're in this recovery community, welcome to the infantry. You're leading the charge. You look at online recovery space today and go back to when this thing first started. I'm a dinosaur. Old Matty J's almost a dinosaur in here. Old Matty J's almost a dinosaur. When we started this thing, it wasn't this big. It was not this available. But looky here. Look what happened. And that was the purpose and the reason to do it in the first place, is to let other people know, wherever they were, in whatever corner or alley of the world they were, there was somebody else in the... Oh, Eric McCoy is the biggest dinosaur in here. That mug's a dinosaur. No matter where you are, man, no matter where you are, you can get a message of hope. You can get a message of somebody somewhere knows exactly what you're going through. And they're either offering some kind of wisdom, they're willing to chat, whatever it is. You don't have to be alone in this. So look what we built, dinosaurs. Proud of it. And proud of us. And we've got to walk accordingly. Because we're leading this charge as we set up this environment of recovery for those that are coming next. And so we just keep making recovery bigger and keep showing people it's possible to heal, and you don't always have to run from this. You don't always have to spend your whole life white-knuckling and suffering through just trying not to do the thing. And you can open yourself up to life's possibilities. And when you ask yourself, what else is possible? Look out. Look out. Because you're going to find out what else is possible. So, you know, I appreciate you guys letting me share all this tonight. I am well over an hour. And so the likelihood that this is going to be seen on some kind of algorithm is slim to none. But man, I've really enjoyed it. And I appreciate you guys just letting me share with you what really inspires and makes me happy. And it makes me happy to get to be here and to do this. And I'm building something for season six that's really going to focus on the body. When I look back at it, I never set this up to be a concept, but it, as I look over it from a different perspective, I can kind of see how it did. My recovery journey started with my mind. Then it went to my soul, my emotions. And now I'm in the body phase where I integrate all of that and, you know, start getting really interested in my body and how to treat it properly and better and all of that. And so I'm going to build season six around that. So I hope that for those of you that are in that space of that body, or even if you're not yet in this journey, come over there and get some nuggets. There's always some information, but I'm going to start building that soon. So it's going to be coming up. Meanwhile, you guys got to check out the official Walk a Mile in My Shoes YouTube channel, because that's where Eric and McCoy and I have this amazingly fun show where we take a walk in some of the most ridiculous and some of the most amazing shoes on earth. And it's so fun. So y'all check that out. All the products that I told you about, well, Amazon, Pamela Topchian, martinjohn.com, the Tao Te Ching. It's so fun, so good. And thank you all so much. Thank you, Jessica Powers, for asking that question and allowing me to do this tonight. It's been super. I love you guys so much. Have the most amazing week ever. Remember, this is a very quick moving time. So watch your thoughts, understand, think more in how you would rather see things than just staring at and focusing on the problems. It's a quick moving energy. It's going to be that way this coming up week too. Big revelation we're having in this whole year. So don't be surprised at what you find out. Move with it. Go with it. Follow your soul. Learn to know yourself, and you'll be your best ally. All right, y'all. Until next Saturday, I love you, and I will see y'all then. Bye, guys.